Hey, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this is an encore presentation of From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Today's episode with Maya Durr has two parts, a conversation and a guided meditation. What we like to do is connect you to various contemplative teachers, hearing their story, as well as sharing their meditative practice. If you don't have time right now to hear Maya's story, just take a look at the show notes for when the meditation portion begins, and feel free to skip ahead. Over the last year at The Hive, we've had a number of opportunities to work with entrepreneurs and folks that are in startup mode and find ourselves referring folks to this interview I had with Maya. Maya is a business consultant and is now a Buddhist teacher in the Soto Zen lineage of Suzuki Roshi. I met her a while back through her work on the Tree of Contemplative Practices, and in this interview, we'll discuss both the origins of what is a contemplative practice as well as how that plays out in your everyday life and work. You could be doing a million different things right now while listening. Maybe you're whitewashing a fence, or maybe you're transplanting the ferns. Whatever that is, just take a second and look around you and enjoy this day and lean in with us. And hopefully you'll be able to meditate with us in the second half of the podcast. Well, we're here today with Maya Durr. Maya, we'll tell you a number of things about her tradition and her practice, but I met Maya through her contemplative action work and then became a big fan of one of the tools that the inventor of the Tree of Contemplative Practices, and then her work, the Liberated Life Project, and things from there. Excited to spend some time with you this morning, Maya.
Thank you, Troy. It's really great to be with you and everybody who's listening out there. Thanks.
You bet. Well, tell us a little bit. Let's just begin by telling me a little bit about how you would frame what your day-to-day work is like and how you would frame that in terms of your own contemplative practice.
Sure. Well, I've been actually for like about the past 8 years now, I have had my own business and been self-employed. Before that, I had a long history of working in nonprofit organizations, many of them that were oriented towards social justice work. I ended up moving to Santa Fe and starting my own business right around the same time. So this is my home here and been here for 8 years. And so my day-to-day work, there's really not ever a typical day, but basically what I do is a combination of I do some consulting to organizations. So I still work with, you know, a number of progressive nonprofits and do consulting with them around strategic planning, around how to market themselves and communications work and fundraising. So that's one piece of what I do. More and more the past couple of years, I've been doing coaching with individual folks. I call them guidance and encouragement sessions. So just really, and I really love to work with people who are in some kind of transition in their lives. So if that's, you know, transitioning like I did, you know, from one profession to another, or, you know, moving to a new place or relationship mm-hmm. transitions. Something about that is really appealing to me. So there's that. And then also I'm doing a lot of writing these days because I have a book contract. So that's a big part of my day-to-day work.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little more about that transition. So what is it like to leap from something that would have been more conventional, would you say? Or what was the leap like?
The leap was a big leap. And it was actually a little bit more of a push than a leap because I actually got laid off from my job. This was in 2008 when the economy was, as you remember, just really mm-hmm. going down the tubes. So it was a really, you know, I think tumultuous time for many folks. So I never saw that coming. So I lost my job in that way. And so I actually had to make that leap. It was something I'd been thinking of for a while, but it definitely that pushed me like off the diving board. And I feel like, you know, a big part of the transition is really, how do I put it? I feel like, you know, taking personal leadership around your life is a lot of it. You know, I think when we come from jobs where we work for somebody else, we're given a lot of structure. We're given a lot of, you know, instructions on how to do things. And sometimes that can feel really limiting, but it's also really comforting too. So for me, you know, a big part of that transition has been really learning how to kind of take initiative about, you know, creating the kind of work I want to do, reaching out to people that will benefit from it, and making those connections happen. So it takes a lot more I think, proactivity on my part for that transition to work.
Mm-hmm. So that let's dig a little deeper into where does that proactivity, where is the sourcing for that proactivity? To give our listeners a little context, you and I, when we met in Albuquerque,
right,
we were talking about our different traditions, my own from a Christian contemplative tradition and yours from a Buddhist mm-hmm. Dharmic tradition. So sometimes ambition can, for me, can feel a little bit like empty carbs. It's this this mm-hmm. kind of denial or escape or kind of coping mechanism. How do you gauge what really is a courageous leap and differentiate that from ego?
Uh-huh. That's a great question. Well, you know, so I've had a meditation practice for close to 20 years now. I wouldn't say I've been incredibly disciplined all those 20 years, but, you know, certainly I think the last decade I've been much more intentional about that practice. And I feel like it permeates everything that I do in ways where I actually don't even kind of think about it anymore. But I think your question is a really great one. And the distinction that I tend to find helpful is, you know, when I'm continually sort of monitoring myself and my intentions, which I think is what a long-term practice helps you to do, mm-hmm. you know, I'll start to notice like, oh, and I can feel it in my body. Like when my body starts feeling more frenetic, when I feel more anxious, you know, those emotions of anxiety sort of are there and there's more of a buzz. That's when I'm kind of seeing like, oh, so my motivation right now is more based on the fear side of things. And that's to me where the ego comes in, like, okay, well then I've got to do this and this and this to sort of, you know, mitigate my own fears. Whereas, you know, when I'm able to kind of center myself in my practice, whether on the cushion or just throughout the day, you know, I will literally feel physically like there's more of a calmness, there's more of a, that buzz is not there. And my intention's actually coming from a wholesome place. It's like, oh, okay, this is something that I really want to create, you know, for the benefit of these people here, or, you know, or even simply just to take care of myself in a wholesome way. But it's less about ego and more about, yeah, like a connection to a greater good.
Hmm. So the, how does that affect your, way to kind of metabolize really good news or really bad news? When it comes to that kind of work, because entrepreneurial work, you're out there right. knocking on doors quite a bit, you're trying doors that are, uh-huh. you know, behind them are fear. And then you get either like fear confirmed or fear disaffirmed. And either way, it can kind of, you know, throw you off on the rails
yeah.
a little.
Well, I feel like, you know, anchoring myself in a practice, both physically sort of helps to calm me down. And also just, you know, this is from a Dharma Buddhist perspective. You know, I feel like it gives a sort of wider view of what reality is. It's like, you know, in this moment, the reality might be, you know, incredible disappointment around whatever, you know, whether that's like, okay, that client didn't come through or the results of this election.
Yeah.
You know, all of that is right there in the immediate sort of reaction. You know, but then holding a sort of wider view of like, okay, well, what else is possible here? And also just, you know, and this is also from my Dharma perspective, just realizing that reality is very much like what we're interpreting in a moment. It doesn't mean that's what is reality. So, you know, I could be seeing, you know, whatever, whether that's the client who slips through my fingers or the election results that I don't like. And I put my spin on it immediately, like, mm-hmm. oh, this is terrible. But then I think the practice for me helps me to understand like, okay, so I've just like given it that interpretation, but what else, you know, what else is there? What else may I not be seeing about what's going on right now?
Let's talk about that for a second. I read your, I think it was a blog post a couple weeks ago after the election, and, the shift on what to do now, you know, you mentioned a lot of your clients are progressive clients, and a lot of our work at the Hive with activists and other folks that are in that space, our first response was a reaction. And and it creates it's tempting to entrench.
Mm-hmm.
How has your practice given you an avenue into other possibilities with this new reality?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for my practice, kind of what I was just describing, like just, you know, at every moment realizing, you know, where am I making an assumption here about what might happen from this point on? And, you know, there's in the Zen Peacemaker Order, which I'm sort of connected to, mm-hmm. Roshi Bernie Glassman is the founder of that. But the kind of foundation of that is working with what he calls the three tenets. And the very first tenet is being with not knowing. So, you know, really just in every moment realizing we have no idea. We really have no idea what this could possibly mean. So I think that is helpful to me. Mm-hmm. But also actually the other thing, and I can put this in like a very wide definition of practice, it's not just happening inside my head. You know, I found it really helpful over the last month to be in the company of really diverse groups of people. Mm-hmm. And hear their take on what's going on. And one of the groups I've been working with for the past half year, actually, is a group of Native women who are up in northern New Mexico called Tewa Women United. And it's been fascinating to me to hear, you know, a number of them say after the election, it was like, well, you know what, you guys? Like, we've been dealing with this for like 500 years now. It's like, this really doesn't make a difference to us. You know, we've been so out on the margins of this country and the decisions that have been made no matter who's in office. And that sort of perspective was just really, it kind of floored me. It's like, wow, I had never thought about it like that. You know, so that, just like listening to other people who come from a very different background than me, that helps me to do some perspective taking and, you know, see this in a different way as well.
That's good. That's good. So I want to talk a little bit about the tree of contemplative practices. This is a little bit of a shift here, but, you know, when we have used it, I remember talking to you once about it, that there's a, you know, if folks, you'll be able to take a look at it. We'll have a link for it on the site. But with the contemplativemind.org, there's these different branches. Actually, why am I describing it? Why don't you describe a little bit of what it is, and then what I want to talk a little bit about is the roots. But tell me a little bit about what someone would see when they're looking at this.
Sure. So if you were looking at this graphic, you would see an image of a tree. And my friend Carrie Bergman, who is at the Center for Contemplative Mind, was the artist of the tree. So I can't take credit for that because I have no artistic ability in that. But the tree came out of a long-term research project that we were doing at the center, which was basically to inquire about how people were bringing contemplative practices into secular settings, like, you know, businesses, healthcare, education. And as we listened to what they were saying in all these interviews that we did, you know, basically what I began to get an image of was this tree, because people were describing very different modes of practice. You know, so some people would talk about, yes, they offered, you know, what we might typically think of as practice, which would be like, you know, sitting on a meditation cushion. Mm-hmm. Other people described like they would work with Tai Chi. You know, they would bring Tai Chi into incarcerated teens. Other people talked about doing council circle practice, which is, you know, kind of a dialogue and deep listening practice. So as I listened, I had this image of a tree, and so you would see these different branches because I began to kind of see how the practices were grouped in different ways. So there were, you know, for example, the branch that's called stillness practices includes things like sitting meditation, and I can't really remember what else is on there.
Centering, silence.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a movement branch which has things like Tai Chi or, you know, authentic movement, dance, yoga. There's a relational branch which has things like the council circle practice, insight dialogue. So all those things were, you know, the branches were meant to kind of really give a very visual image of the diversity of practices that are available.
Yeah. So tell me then about the roots, because in one sense, mm-hmm. the diversity of practices could feel kind of like a, this is a gross metaphor, but a golden corral of, you know, just just right. walk mm-hmm. through and here's all this buffet and pick whatever practice you want today. And so tell me a little about the roots.
Yes. So the roots are actually the most important part of that graphic. And it's often the, you know, the thing that people see, that's the last thing they see. But it's really important to point out that the roots are what tie the whole thing together, just like a tree, right? Mm-hmm. So the source of the tree is the ground beneath it and the roots that are going into that. So on the tree of practices, what defines these practices, you know, I mean, you could have something that's just an activity. You could be dancing, and that's not necessarily a contemplative practice. But what's making things a practice are these two, what's in the two roots. So basically, one is that there needs to be an intention that what you're doing through this practice is developing a closer connection with something greater than yourself. So, you know, whether you define that as God or Buddha or, you know, nature or higher power, doesn't really matter, but just that you're being connected with something larger than just you. And then the other root that's there is that it's also, you're holding this intention of increasing your own self-awareness through this practice that you're doing. So those are what, really make the difference between something being just an activity or it becoming a contemplative practice.
So a lot of folks, pick up mindfulness for this sense of like, I want to be more efficient at work, and I want to focus. And mm-hmm. would you say in that case, this is some of that exploration of awareness without the communal component of it? Or say a little bit about that kind of gateway drug almost of.
say a lot about that. If somebody was coming to it with just the intention of being more productive or efficient, I would certainly have a big critique of that.
Yeah.
And I think that's my biggest critique of, you know, often when corporations bring mindfulness in, that's why they're doing it. So I don't even know that I would define that as mindfulness, to be honest with you. I think that's something else.
Yeah.
It's like a productivity tool, but that's a very superficial understanding of what, to me, you know, mindfulness, and that's actually the way Buddhism defines it too, is much deeper than that. I would put that in a different category.
Yeah. So I'd say keep going with that. You know, one of the things, those of us from a variety of different traditions, when we use, sometimes we're trading language between lineages and clearly yeah. mindfulness is one from that you could speak to mm-hmm. more than I could really in terms of our lineages. So say a little bit about what mindfulness then is, as you understand it.
From a Buddhist perspective, mindfulness is it's one of the spokes of the Eightfold Path. So there's right mindfulness, or sometimes it's called whole mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't exist actually in separation from other parts of that Eightfold Path, which include things like right view. So it all is a piece together, and you know, ethics are part of that. Morality, precepts, so right action. So you actually can't have, in Buddhism, you can't have mindfulness just standing all by itself. It's kind of intimately interwoven with these other spokes of the Eightfold Path.
Gotcha. Well, tell me then about, so you're doing work, the Liberated Life Project, and then that's translating in some ways to a particular book called Love Your Work.
Right.
And, more than just telling us about the book that you're, you know, clearly in love with right now and in the process of, you know, birthing this beautiful thing, tell me how your work as a practice, how that interacts with business life and this sense of vocation and work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the book that I'm working on, it got its start actually about 4 or 5 years ago. I had created an online course called Fall in Love with Your Work. And the way that came about was, you know, I think probably if each of us looks at our lives, we can find like there's a thread that connects all of it, or a question that's kind of like led us down different paths in our life. Mm-hmm. And for me, that question has been for a very long time, like, how do I create work that I love? I can remember growing up and just seeing so many people around me, like, you know, my own parents and, you know, my friends and their parents just couldn't stand what they did for a living. They just lived for their vacations. And I never wanted to be like that. So that deep desire to kind of find a way to have work that I love came from way back then. And, you know, I feel like at some point that was, you know, way before I had a meditation practice. But when those two things intersected, you know, it felt like that sort of gave the fuel for this quest as well. It's like, oh, okay. So now that I understand things like, you know, how do I live a life where I'm trying to create less harm and do some good in the world? How does that inform the work that I do? So I'm not quite sure if I'm answering your question.
But no, absolutely. I mean, I think folks that are listening, what the conversation that keeps kind of showing up around the hive and the one we're going to kind of keep amplifying is this intersection between what does it mean to show up in life with that type of agency and freedom, with a sense of real calling and purpose, and how does that life connect to others, and how does my practice deepen my relationship to that work without, I think the word I would use is without attachment, because a lot of times our work then becomes an obsession. And so it feels for a lot of folks that there's like two, that there's a false choice, either just be part of the machine or be obsessed. And I hear you describing a middle way, or a more aware agency.
Yeah. And I feel like it can look, you know, in many different ways. I mean, in the course and in the book itself, like I have what I call the six keys to liberation-based livelihood. And to me, a liberation-based livelihood is one in which you're really able to kind of express your core intention, like your purpose for being on the planet, through your work. But that can look really different, you know. So it can, you know, for some of us, for various reasons, we might have to continue on with the job that we're in within a structure that, you know, may not be ideal. But it's like, okay, but then how do I really, you know, through awareness practices, really become intimate with what my core intention is, with my purpose for being here, and how do I, you know, bring that into this current job, you know, and other times we might be able to actually create something that's, you know, outside of that framework. But yeah, I think the attachment piece is interesting. It's like, if we get too hung up on like the form that we want it to take, we can create a lot of suffering for ourselves and for other people. Right. Mm-hmm. So I feel like what I teach is a lot of, flexibility around that. Like, yes, like to be really strongly connected with what your purpose is, but be really open to like how that can show up through your work. There's just so many ways that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, if folks wanted to know more about your work, where would they, where all would you want to send them?
Yeah, they can visit my website, which is the same as my name. So it's Maya Duerr, MAIADUERR.com. And that will send you off in all kinds of directions about my projects that I'm up to.
That's awesome. Well, in a second, we'll be back, and I'm going to invite Maya to lead us in a practice. I guess before we do that, would you want to say a little bit about the practice and, just kind of, we do this thing sometimes checking in, where are we today before we jump into the practice? So just a little bit of like context of, where you're sitting and what today kind of feels like as you're kind of dropping into this practice as we join you in it.
Okay. Sure. So I am sitting in my home, in my home office in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on this late fall, early winter day. And probably like a lot of you folks, I mean, we're still within a month of the election, so I'm still processing and digesting all that means. And yeah, I think that's probably a good check-in for where I'm at. And the practice itself that I'm going to offer folks, and some of you may have done this before, but I think it's never possible to do this practice too much. So this comes from the Buddhist tradition, and it's called loving kindness practice. Another phrase for it is also metta, M-E-T-T-A, and metta means loving kindness in the Pali language. So that's the practice that I'm going to guide you through.
Hey there, you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsink, founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation,
Art and Action. We're a nonprofit located in the North Side neighborhood of Cincinnati, and we get folks together for 6 to 8 week groups. You can hear more about us at cincyhive.org.
Well, welcome back to From the Hive. I'm Troy Bronsink, and we have been in a conversation with Maya Durr, a Buddhist teacher and entrepreneur working with businesses, and particularly working on a project right now called Loving Your Work. And Maya is going to guide us in a meta practice. And I'll just in a second here step back and push to mute and let Maya kind of guide us in this time.
Okay. So wherever you're at, wherever you're listening to this podcast from, I would just invite you to find a comfortable place for you to sit right now. Or you even could lay down if that feels good to you. I'm going to take you through this guided meditation, which will take probably about 10 to 15 minutes. So it'd be really wonderful for you to just be in a place where you feel safe and comfortable and relaxed. So loving kindness, that's the theme of this meditation. And from the Buddhist tradition, when we talk about loving kindness, it's a very unconditional and inclusive kind of love. It's a love that's really informed by wisdom. And it doesn't have any conditions attached to it. It doesn't depend on whether we deserve it or not. It's not limited to our friends or family. It really extends out to all living beings, including ourselves. And it also, another important aspect of it is that there's no expectations of getting anything in return. So it's a very non-transactional kind of love. It's very ideal and pure, and all of us have that in potential. So this practice is about really cultivating that potential so that we can develop that quality inside ourselves and radiate that out to others. So in this guided meditation, I'll walk you through three different steps or phases of loving kindness practice. So first, we begin with ourselves. For unless we have some kind of measure of this unconditional love and acceptance for ourselves, it's really difficult to extend that out to others. So just begin by paying attention and noticing your body in this moment. Just notice any feelings of tension, or maybe your body feels relaxed right now. Whatever it is, just turn your awareness towards your body and the sensations that are present for you right now. And as we go through this and the other two steps, really just want to ground yourself in a very non-judgmental place. So, whatever you notice coming up, it's totally fine. And just to recognize that if you feel any sense of judgment, just notice that and release that as well. So begin to focus now around your solar plexus area and your chest. And send your awareness to that area and your heart center. And then see if you can take one or two more intentional breaths into that area. Just breathe in deeply. And release your breath. Once again, breathe in deeply. And really send that breath and that air down into your heart area, your heart center, as if that's where you're breathing from, and release it. And then just continue that breathing, centering your attention on that heart area. And begin by generating a feeling of kindness towards yourself that emanates from that part of your body. Just really hold that intention to be kind to yourself. And as you're doing this, just notice if there's any anything that comes up to block that sense of kindness, whether that's self-judgment or criticism or numbness. Again, just noticing without any kind of judgment on that, but just see what's there for you. And if those blockages do arise, just see if you can drop a little bit beneath that to the place where you can genuinely care for yourself and where you want strength and health and safety for yourself. And then just continue to breathe in and out from that heart center. And then I'm going to say a series of phrases to you, so you can listen to them as I say them. And then you can silently just repeat them to yourselves and really feel these wishes inside you. May I be free from harm and danger. May I be safe and protected. May I be free from mental suffering and distress. May I be happy. May I be free of physical pain and suffering. May I be healthy. May I be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, and with ease. Really let each of those phrases just spread throughout your whole mind and body and heart. And we're going to move into the second step, which is beginning to extend that out to another person. So see if you can think of a person in your life who really invites in you that feeling of pure and unconditional loving kindness. The love that doesn't depend on getting anything back. It might be a grandparent or a teacher, a dear friend. It could even be an animal friend. So really, it's just someone or something, some creature that it's just so easy for you to naturally feel that love for. It takes no effort for you to feel that. So as you bring that person or that creature to your mind, we're going to use these phrases again and repeat that. And in this time, you'll send that out to that person or creature that you have. May she or he be free from inner and outer harm and danger. May she or he be safe and protected. May they be free from mental suffering or distress. May they be happy. May they be free of physical pain and suffering. May they be healthy. May they be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, and with ease. And then finally, we'll move into the third step. And this is where we're going to extend that loving kindness out to all beings. And again, returning, you know, this is all connected to your own sense of being able to direct that loving kindness towards yourself. So return to that ember of warm and tender loving kindness that's at the center of your heart and your being. And then just begin to visualize, you know, whether that's for you like a really wide circle or a net, a web, but all the beings, you know, all the humans, all the creatures, the mountains, the waters, just really feel yourself in that web of interconnected relationships with all beings. And then we'll go through this series of phrases one more time. So again, as you continue to breathe into your own heart and from your own heart, you may want to just repeat these silently to yourself as I say them. May all beings be safe, happy, healthy, and live joyously. May all living beings be safe, happy, and live joyously. May all living beings be free from mental suffering or distress. May all living beings be free of physical pain and distress. May all living beings be safe and protected. And may all beings live happily and with joy. So again, just allow those phrases to really permeate your own being and just feel what it's like to extend that out to others. So thank you for taking part in that practice. I hope that's something that can nourish your daily life in whatever way feels right for you.
Thanks, Maya. I feel like it would, I wish we could all see one another and just maybe even just from where we're at, just in respect, kind of bow and honor the work that each other is doing. And thank you for hosting this practice.
Thank you, Troy. Yeah. It's an honor to share it with everybody.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Well, thanks for being our guest today, and encourage folks to, you can follow the website and other things to see more about what Maya is up to, and we look forward to, when do you expect Love Your Work to show up?
It doesn't show up for a while.
Yeah.
The publisher's work, but it should come out by, I think, October of next year, 2017.
All right.
Yeah, I actually, I do have a chapter in a book that just did come out, though. There's a book called Real World Mindfulness for Beginners.
Ah.
Navigate Daily Life One Practice at a Time. And it's actually a really great book. I can send you a link to it. But I have a chapter in there on how to help others who need help through mindfulness. So, yeah, there's some good resources in that book as well.
Ah, terrific. Thanks so much. Thank everyone for listening to us from the Hive, and blessings on your day as you go out into the world. Thanks, Maya.
Thanks, Troy. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'm Troy Bronsink, and this has been From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Today has been an encore presentation of an interview with Maya Durr, and you can check out the show notes for ways to connect to her work and her recent book. From the Hive is produced by Joey Taylor. Take a deep breath and enjoy the day.